This episode of the Energy Stoners Cafe is sponsored by the Black Arts Matter Network, blackartsmatter.net. Welcome to the Energy Stoners Cafe. My name is Toni Quest, and I'm really happy that you're here. I like to interview the most interesting people I can find on the planet. So grab a cup of coffee, sit down, relax, and listen. You're going to find that these guests are so intriguing, you'll wonder why you didn't know about them before. Hi, everybody. Welcome back to the Energy Stoners Cafe. As you know, I have a great guest for you, as I do every single time, and I comb the planet for the most interesting guests I can find. And I once again have found an extremely interesting guest. I can't take full credit. I'm going to give some credit to my director. But this gentleman's name is Richie Goods, and he has a band called Nuclear Fusion. He's a bass player. And you know, if anybody out there is into music, the bass player is like the cool guy in the band. Well, in this case, he's the cool guy in the band, and it's his band. And he actually has been doing this for some time, and we're going to talk to him about this. My understanding, Richie, welcome to the show, by the way.
Thanks so much, Toni. Thanks for having me on.
Yes, it's my pleasure. And I'm always very enamored with musicians. I'm one of these people, I'm not like an official musician, so when I get around a musician, I'll be honest, I always feel a little bit nervous because I feel like I'm talking to one of the cool people on the planet. I don't see myself as one of them. It's true, especially a bass player. You guys are the coolest. So you have this band, and you work with different people, but I just want to start by mentioning that I read that you are the youngest jazz musician inducted into the Pittsburgh Jazz Hall of Fame. Wow. How did that happen? How'd you do that?
Well, first of all, there's just one correction. Nuclear Fusion was my band that I had years ago, but now for about the past 5 to 7 years, the band is called the Goods Project.
Goods Project. Okay, I like that too. So tell me about you getting inducted into the Jazz Hall of Fame in Pittsburgh, of all places. It sounds very important.
Yeah, well, that's my hometown is Pittsburgh, and that was really a big honor because Pittsburgh has a huge, rich jazz legacy, and I always debate with musicians about where the most jazz greats come from, and most of the jazz greats come from either Pittsburgh, Philadelphia, or Detroit.
Okay.
So that was a shock and a huge honor. And they actually surprised me with the award. And I did a show with Mulgrew Miller, and they presented in Pittsburgh, and they presented me with the award.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
So how did you get involved in jazz music? I mean, there are many stories. I've interviewed a lot of musicians, and everybody's story is a little bit different, sometimes very different. How did you get involved in playing music, and how did you get involved in playing jazz?
I come from a very musical family, and the church, you know, my family, we went to church 8 days a week. Uh-huh. And my mother was the pianist and choir director. And I started taking piano lessons when I was 5. Everyone in my family takes piano lessons and plays another instrument. So I started taking piano lessons. Then I moved on to drums. Then a lot of other instruments, sax and guitar and trumpet and xylophone. And somehow, when I got to high school, it's when I decided I wanted to make a career out of music. And in junior high school, my counselor told me that I was talented and I could make a career out of music. So I went to performing arts high school. And at that point, I decided I wanted to be the best musician in the world, basically.
Okay.
And I always thought, and I was told, and I thought that jazz musicians were some of the most talented musicians in the world. So I said, okay, well, I got to learn to play jazz. And I really was using jazz as a tool just to help me with music. I just loved all kinds of music. I loved gospel. I loved rock music, R&B, rap. I loved it all. But I was using jazz to kind of just hone my musical skills. And then I got hooked.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what jazz means. Is like, jazz is like an addiction. You got the jazz, like you got caught. You got caught up in this thing, and that's what happened. And I just fell in love with the music.
I'm wondering, and I'm thinking about other people I've spoken to in my own personal experience with jazz. I happen to love jazz. So when I found out I was going to interview a jazz musician, I was very into it. I love jazz. I was conceived to jazz. I always say the legend is some of us were conceived to Dizzy Gillespie and some of us were conceived to Cole Porter. I was conceived to Dizzy Gillespie. But
well, the beautiful thing about jazz is that, especially nowadays, it's so wide open. It's fused with so many different elements. So I really have a theory that everybody will like some form of jazz. Like a lot of people say, oh, I don't like jazz, but most people, I think, have a very narrow mind of what jazz is. Now, jazz is a very broad term, and it's fused with, nowadays, so many elements. It's fused with classical, it's fused with African elements, it's fused with Latin elements, it's fused with rock, hip hop, pop, whatever you could, folk music. And so I think there's some kind of jazz out there that you will like, whoever you are.
It's a very sophisticated vernacular of music, jazz.
Yes.
And some people, you say that, they say they don't like it. I would say they don't understand it. And I think that you have to find the type of jazz that's going to like touch your soul, so to speak. I'm thinking about the difference between fusion and Dixieland, for instance. You know, like the New Orleans thing, you know, which is becoming more popular. I think about John Batiste, who is the musical director of one of the late night talk shows.
Colbert,
yes.
Yeah, the Colbert Show, yeah.
Yes, and I've heard, and he puts out a lot of music too. How would you categorize the type of jazz that you enjoy most?
Well, first of all, I have a very eclectic taste in music, period. So I don't only like jazz. I don't only listen to jazz. I listen to so many different kinds of music. And me personally, I'm not necessarily against labels because it helps give people an idea of what they're stepping into before they step into it. But I love music in general. I love good music. And there's no style of music that I don't like. And there's no style of music where I like everything. So I don't like every song in jazz or every artist or every show I go to. But personally, right now, the music that I'm doing is not so much traditional jazz, but it has a lot of elements of funk. It has elements of gospel. It has some elements of rock and some elements of traditional jazz.
How could someone find you to listen? Are you on any of the platforms like Spotify, or do you have a website?
I'm on pretty much all the streaming platforms, anywhere you can stream music. I have 3 records. 2 of them were under Richie Good and Nuclear Fusion, and the latest record and a few other singles are under Richie Good's and The Goods Project. And I also have a website, www.richiegoods.com.
Okay, so they could see you, hear you, and play you over and over again would be ideal.
And also Bandcamp. I always urge people to go to Bandcamp, which I haven't been using that long, but that's one of the things the pandemic has taught us as artists, as to, you know, not give our music away so cheap. And so because we were so dependent on making money touring, and since people aren't buying CDs as much, or we make our money off of touring, but we spent a lot of money on these records. We make these great records, and places like Spotify, Apple Music are basically giving them away for, you know, pennies.
Yeah. How do you feel about that?
Oh, I think it's awful. The one thing about Bandcamp, you put your music on Bandcamp, the artist chooses what price they want to sell it for. And the artist gets 80 or 90% of the profits. Whereas if you put it on Spotify, for one stream, you may get maybe 2 cents.
Wow.
For one stream. So you can have 1,000 streams, which will equal up to, I don't know, maybe a dollar or a couple dollars or something like that, maybe $3, something like that.
Yeah, it seems like you have to give it all away. You know, I can empathize with you as an artist. I don't think it's really good to give away your talent because what you do is so extraordinarily rare.
Well, thank you.
Really, most people can't do it. So why should it be cheap? And why should you give it away? So I'm all for you getting paid what you're worth, which is a lot more than 2 cents. It's a lot more than $2. What did you do during COVID, during the COVID lockdown? Because I've heard all kinds of stories about different artists handling the COVID situation in unique ways. Everybody's story is so different. What did you do during the initial pandemic times when most of us were not going anywhere, not seeing anyone, not doing our work, not getting it out there?
Well, I actually went through phases. Phase one, which was probably the worst phase, was disbelief. Just because I've been a touring musician for 30 years consistently. I would have definitely like really busy. There were times where I was on the road 250, 275 days in a year.
Wow, it's a lot.
There's slow times where it's maybe not quite as much, but this was the first time there was a no time, like no days on the road. And I literally saw in an hour just like tens of thousands of dollars of work getting canceled within an hour. Like that was March 12th, and I'll never forget that day. And so basically, I got home and it was just very foreign to me to not have a schedule or anything. And so basically, I drank and ate ice cream and ate popcorn for about two, three, four weeks and gained a bunch of weight.
Hello.
and then I realized, I said, okay, this thing is going to be around for a while. And I figured out my finances, how me and my family are going to survive, you know, for the time being. And then I said, okay, well, now I'm going to use this time. I haven't had this kind of time in 30 years, so I'm going to take advantage of it. So I started practicing like I hadn't practiced in like 20 years or something. And I start learning new things on both electric bass and upright bass. And then I start collaborating with musicians. I start perfecting my live streams and I start doing live streams with musicians. I start doing remote shows with musicians and I start collaborating with this awesome vibraphonist, Shenshen Liu. She was one of the few people that, you know, I kind of trusted in my house. We were kind of quarantined. She didn't catch the train or anything. I would go pick her up and we would work like probably 3 days every week writing music and recording. So we're coming out with a project in the fall or end of summer or fall. So I think I took good advantage of the time.
So you actually were able to like further hone your skills. You had plenty of time to think, I imagine.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Plenty of time to think. And I talked to it was kind of nice to see musicians, especially the jazz community, come together. And so many musicians, we would just call each other just to say, hey, how you doing? Like, these are people like this. We never really call each other. We just happen to run into each other in the club or something, or we're on a gig together. But guys were calling each other. How you making out financially, and giving each other ideas, and people sending emails and texts, man, there's this grant, you know, you need to apply for this grant, and all different things to help each other out, which was, I thought was just beautiful.
Very proactive.
seeing a lot of the industry people and getting on some of the meetings with some of the industry people talking about what needs to happen. And we're realizing how terrible the deal that the artists have with these streaming services and what we can do about it and how to be proactive about things like that.
Tell me about the experience with the streaming services, because a lot of people don't, many people don't understand that, and they don't appreciate what you have to go through under certain circumstances. Maybe you could talk a little bit about that. It's not as simple as people think.
Yeah, it's not. And basically, the music business, in terms of not seeing the revenue that we used to, like in, I guess, the 80s, 90s, 70s, 80s, and 90s, when it was really booming. And with CDs were so cheap to make, and they're selling for like $15 and $20. You sell a CD for $20, artists may get $15 for a CD. Now people are, they're still spending money on music, but instead of buying an actual CD, paying $10 a month on Spotify, $10 a month on Apple Music. And then, but Apple Music, most of that money, and they give the artist only a little bit. If you're a record, and they get tons of money from advertising. And if you're a major record label, there's only, three or four major record labels. And basically, Spotify and Apple Music and Tidal, they have deals with these major labels to give them basically a kickback of the advertising and the extra streaming money. So the labels are still getting their money, but it's the independent artists and the smaller artists that really lose out on the deal.
It seems kind of unfair. It seems very unfair.
Yeah, and well, they are making some changes and some regulations and making, and the other thing is, there's a free Spotify streaming platform. You don't have to pay for it, but your limit is to what you can do. But you can still type in Richie Goods and listen to my music for free. Spotify doesn't charge you, and I won't get paid.
Unless you're on the paid version.
Yes, unless they're paying $10 a month, I'm not getting paid.
Well, I have something to just lift your spirits a little bit about that I know about Spotify. I did the free version for at least a year, okay? But as you get into the second year, they bombard you with so many commercials about their paid version. And it's like every other song. And you get so sick of it. It's like, okay, I get it, you know? Don't tell me again, I'll pay. And you just go kicking and screaming, and you pay that $10 just to get them to shut up so you can hear the music. So that should be a little consolation.
Well, the other thing is, now a lot of people listen to music on YouTube, and especially in a lot of other countries, they don't even do Spotify or Apple Music. They just go to YouTube. And YouTube does, they actually pay a little bit, but it's such a small amount. And I will literally get, I think it's something like, if you get a million streams to get maybe $400, you think you're somebody streaming your music a million times. That sounds like a lot of money.
I don't want to talk anything bad about any of these big companies, but I'm listening to you. I hear every word you're saying, and I have a lot of empathy for you with regard to this. I'm not a musician. I'm a different kind of artist, but I have empathy for you because it seems that, and you may or may not agree, I'll ask you this question. Do you feel like sometimes artists get put the screws put to us, so to speak, for lack of another term? Even in copywriting, they've made it harder for us. They're really hammering us, and a lot of artists don't know about that, what's happening with copywriting, and the prices are going up.
I need to learn more about the business, and I think all artists need to learn more about the business. And when I do clinics or workshops with young musicians, I tell them this, because in most college programs, you go to college for music, they only teach you about music, but we're in the music business. It's a business, so you have to learn about it. Mm-hmm. Because ultimately, it's our music, it's our careers, it's our talent. So we can really control it, but it kind of has to, I think it kind of needs to be done as a collaborative effort, you know, because one of the dilemmas independent artists struggle with is, like, if Beyonce puts her music on Spotify, everyone feels you have to have your music on Spotify because no one's going to find you if it's not. But if you sold your music yourself, you may get a small fraction, like 1% of the streams that you would get on Spotify, 1% of the visibility, but you would probably make 10 times as much money if you just sold it yourself. I'm a Taylor Swift fan, and for a lot of different reasons. I think she's a talented person, but...
great lyricist.
Yes, but she's a fierce businesswoman. And when Apple Music first started, their deal was, just to show you how good Apple Music is, we're going to give you the first 30 days for free to try it out. But what they did, they said to all the artists that put their music on, and they said to the artists, we're not going to pay you anything for these streams for 30 days because people were giving it away. And so Taylor Swift said, well, you're not going to give my music away, so my music will not be on Apple Music. And then Apple Music changed their tune because of her and said, okay, no, we'll pay the artist still.
What do you think about the fact, and this is like, it's just a little bit of digression here because it's sort of like a subject that speaks to my heart and I speak about it to other artists. What do you think about the fact that even to this day, even though we know that as an artist, you're actually doing something that most people cannot do. Most people cannot do what you do as an artist. It's just, it's certain people are gifted with it. What do you think about the fact that so often as an artist, and I think this happens, I know it happens to visual artists a lot, but I'm learning it happens to many performing artists, that people expect you to just give it away to them. They don't want to pay. What do you think about that sort of ongoing trend, which I'm working really hard to change that for myself and everyone? What do you think about that?
First of all, what I do, it took me a while. I'm not a cocky guy or anything. And so I never thought, it took me a long time before I realized that what I could do was special. And now on one hand, I'm very grateful. And anytime before I go on stage, I always say a prayer. And I thank God for our talents, because I know as much as I practice and as hard as I work, it started with God giving me a gift. And without that gift, it wouldn't have mattered how hard I practiced or how hard I worked. I couldn't be where I am now. So I don't take that for granted. And I know I have something special to offer. But at the same time, I know God gave me this gift. He wants me to share it with people. But I know He doesn't want me to give it away either. I mean, there are times I think it's a good cause, and I will do things sometimes for free, you know, and I think it's a good cause. But in general, if you like what I do, I think you should respect that, and you should want me to prosper, you know, and you should want to pay. I think during this pandemic, has made a lot of people see and appreciate the arts. To not be able to go to a show or a play or whatever. And I think people started to appreciate it, because one of the things I started, and Jim knows this, that I start doing shows in my backyard.
Yeah.
And
I love that.
Man, people came to this show, and these were some of the most amazing shows I've ever done because I charged $25 at the door. A lot of people gave more than $25. People were donating, and when I did live streams, people were donating so much money. And that let me know that I was appreciated. And I think some people that like my music start realizing, oh, we need to let this artist know that we appreciate him. I don't know if that answers your question.
Well, it does kind of answer the question. I just find that especially during the pandemic, I've interviewed quite a few people that have discussed alternative ways of actually making a living, especially musicians and performing artists. I'm finding particularly, what should I say, inspiring about the things that they're doing on their own. Now, you use the word collaboration a couple of times. Have you found that you were able to better collaborate during the pandemic? And do you anticipate future collaboration now that things are starting to open up and things are starting to, there's a light at the end of the tunnel here? Like, what are your plans? Like, what do you foresee for yourself?
It was really fun to be able to collaborate. And that was something, I think some of my most creative times were when I was in college and high school, because we weren't getting paid for anything really. And we had the time. We would just get together and write and play and come up with stuff, do things as a band. And we weren't so concerned with money and bills and everything. So we could fully be creative. And then somewhere along the lines, you know, it became about money and paying bills and everything and the business. And I feel like some of the creativity went away. So during this pandemic, man, I felt just amazingly creative and just saw so many possibilities and with different artists and everything. I did some stuff with the great vibraphonist Warren Wolf and a lot of different people. And people were sending me tracks to put bass on. And it was really awesome. So I definitely want to continue doing that and just seeing what comes out of working with different artists.
Do you think this is going to continue this trend? Because it sounds like something very good. So do you think this trend that you sort of started during COVID will continue now that things are opening up? Will there be a hybrid kind of situation? Do you anticipate being out there? What are your plans?
Well, my plans are definitely to be out there, because for me, there's no greater feeling than to be on a stage in front of a live audience. So I want to be on the road as much as possible. To be on stage, to get the energy from the audience is indescribable. It is the most amazing feeling for me in the world. And so I definitely want to do that as much as possible. But in between, I definitely want to keep the creative part that I had going during the pandemic. I won't have the same kind of time I had during the pandemic, but I'm going to find some kind of way to keep this creative thing happening.
Do you think the live streaming will go away, or do you think it'll just have a different position within the whole big ball of wax, so to speak?
The latter.
Yes, the latter. The latter.
I think
okay.
I think, and I've talked to most musicians, the majority of musicians I spoke to are so tired of live streams. But I think it is great for someone to be able to do a show and people anywhere in the world can watch the show in real time. And I think that can be an extra source of income, you know, for a show. A club can pay you. You can go into a club and do a show and get the fee from the live audience, but it can be streamed around the world. People can pay for the stream, and artists and venues can make extra revenue from live streams. And it's great for the audience to be able to if you can't make it to a show for your favorite artist, you could still watch the show.
Well, there's like, it seems to be there. Well, not say seems to be, there is an internationalization for most industry in my experience in general, from everything from music to medicine. There's an internationalization of it when you actually go on to a platform. But in terms of live streaming, you're like, for instance, this show that we're on right now, and it definitely goes internationally, it goes globally. And so I have people that listen to this show that are from all the way on the other side of the world. So I'm wondering how this internationalization of the arts would affect you in particular. Like, what do you feel about that?
I think that's great. I've always been into technology, and I just think technology making the world smaller and closer and everything more accessible, I think it's great. And even though maybe Spotify might skip over this episode since I talked so much stuff about Spotify, I really think the streaming platform, I think it's an awesome idea. I think it's great. I just think the artist should be getting paid a reasonable fee. Because what they're getting paid is not reasonable at all.
Yeah. I have a little problem with the fact that very talented artists like yourselves are not getting compensated appropriately for the great things that you do. I think that you deserve the money. You know, I want to talk to you again sometime because I want to find out what happened, where you're at, let's say, 6 months from now.
Oh, yeah, that would be great.
6 months from now, I believe it'll be Christmas time. Maybe you'll come to an in-studio place at some point.
That would be great.
How can my audience reach you? Like, how can they see you? Where can they find you? I want them to be able to find you. Because I have seen you perform. When I saw the picture, I said, I've seen you perform. You're awesome. You really are. I don't even use that word much. But you're awesome.
Thank you so much. Well, I live in New York in Putnam Valley, like in the Westchester area. You can find me on my website, richiegoods.com, Facebook, Instagram. The next few months, I have a few things. I'm doing some shows with the awesome Lisa Fisher. She's been with the Rolling Stones forever and Luther Vandross, and she had hit songs. So I'll be with Lisa Fisher in July. We do 3 nights at the Blue Note in New York, and then a concert in Pittsburgh at Heartwood Acres. And I have some shows with Alicia Olatuja in June and July, Carolyn Linhart. We go to Aspen next week. And then I have a tour coming up in the Midwest. I think we have some dates in the Westchester area, like Peekskill in June and August. And then we go to Baltimore. We have dates in Ohio and Detroit. And the tour is still coming together, but that's in October. And then my band will be going to Switzerland for a couple weeks in November and December.
Wow, that's very impressive. Very impressive schedule.
Yeah, I'm glad things are starting to come together and come through. It's exciting.
Well, I have to wrap it up. I'm getting the signal from our friend Jim right now, but also the signal that we were going to have you back on because I would like to reconnect with you because things have changed and things are changing so fast. And you sound like you just picked up and start and where you left off and you have your schedule going. I'm really very impressed and I'm extremely happy for you that you're seeing some success, Richie. You know, it really is such an inspiration to talk to people that are doing well and just keep on keeping on. It's fantastic. You're a gem.
Thank you so much, Tony. I've enjoyed talking to you so much.
Likewise. And I know my audience is going to definitely enjoy this interview and they will want to hear more from you. And I'd like to have you in studio when you find yourself landing in one spot and you can come into my studio when that reopens. And we'll interview you again in person.
That would be awesome.
Thank you so much, Richie, for coming on to the podcast. I really appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Thank you. It's been so much fun talking to you. And I love your spirit. I love your energy. So thank you for that.
Likewise. And I have to say goodbye to the audience just for now. I'm going to say goodbye to the audience. And thank you for tuning in once again. Tune in for the next episode of the Energy Stoners Cafe. It'll definitely be a good one. And look forward to hearing from Richie Goods again on the Energy Stoners Cafe at some point in the foreseeable future. Okay, bye-bye. Thank you for listening to the Energy Stoners Cafe.